David Aleph on Aleph. Let's see where it is here. Rabbi Yochanan Omar.
Yeah.
Again, we're trying to interpret the meaning of the word the name Achashverosh. And we had Shmuel. And Shmuel said that the root of the name Achashverosh is Choshech, that he brings darkness, a kind of, he calls it a black fire, which is like he compares it to a fire underneath a pot, which causes the pot to get black on the bottom. So that's what happens to the faces of Israel. You know, I was brought up thinking that Achashverosh was just a dumb king, but you see the Chazal come very, very hard on him. He's a Russian Marusha. Rabbi Yochanan Omar, he takes the Ach and the Rosh of Achashverosh, even though, again, the word Rosh here appears without an Aleph at the end. It's the last three letters of Achashverosh's name are a Resh Vav Shin, but he allows himself that poetic license. So you have the Ach at the beginning and the Rosh at the end. And what does it mean? Kol Shezochro Omar Ach L'Rosh. Ach is a kind of a kvetch.
Yeah.
Oy. So he sort of like bangs himself on the head and says, Oy, we have the tzara of this king, Achashverosh. So the word Ach here, because before I think the Gemara had a statement in the name of Rav that he was like the Ach of Nebuchadnezzar. You remember that he and Nebuchadnezzar had something in common. And they all wanted to destroy the Migdash. But here the word Ach means Oy. And it's a kvetch that you whenever you conjure up an image of Achashverosh, you bang yourself on the head with a kvetch because of all the tzaras that he brought on Klal Yisrael. Rabbi Chanina Amari has another interpretation of Achashverosh. Shahakol Nasu Roshim Biyomov. This has one advantage here, because where Rabbi Yochanan had the Rosh, meaning the head, so you had to add the Aleph at the end. Now you don't even have to bother with the Aleph, because if you read it Reishin is a poor person. So people became poor. I guess he confiscated their property. Shenemar Vayosem HaMelech HaChashverosh Mas. Right at the end of the Megillah, it says that he imposed the tax on the people. So people became poor in his time. Honestly, I'm not sure why that has any metaphysical significance, if you find, that this should be eternalized in the Megillah, although, no. Yeah, so that I don't know. Let's go on. Now the Gemara darshins and says the following. It says, Vayhi bimei Achashverosh hu Achashverosh HaMolech mihod vad kush. So there are a couple extra words here in this pasuk, because it could have just simply said, Vayhi bimei Achashverosh HaMolech mihod vad kush. What does it mean, hu Achashverosh? So the Gemara darshins, hu berisho mitchiloso viad sofo. From the beginning, as soon as he became a melech, he was already an enemy of the Jewish people.
And this comes just from the words hu Achashverosh.
Right, from the two extra words hu Achashverosh. Why does it have to repeat hu Achashverosh? But hu Achashverosh, he's the Achashverosh that we know from the beginning, and he continues till the end of his life. So here we have a couple of comments here, which are based on different psukim and on Rashi on different psukim. So the first comment that we have here is that the word hu, whenever it's superfluous in the Tanakh, we say hu bahavayoso. Hu bahavayoso means he is what he always was. And in the pasuk in Ezra, which is another important point to understand, to appreciate this Gemara, it says, Uvemalchusa Achashverosh, betchilas malchuso, kosu sitna Al Yoshve Yehuda v'Yushalayim. So they wrote certain letters that were circulated, and these letters were full of sitna, full of hatred against the Jewish people. So this would propagate anti-Semitism. And Rashi says that this sitna was all about the fact that the Jewish people wanted to build the Beis HaMikdash. So by sending out these letters that incurred the wrath and the hatred against the Jewish people, it would prevent the forces that would prevent the Jewish people from building the Beis HaMikdash would be strengthened. And this is already at the beginning of the Malchus of Achashverosh. B'tchilas Malchuso, the Pasuk says in Ezra. And I'm not exactly sure if it was Achashverosh himself who promulgated these letters, who circulated these letters, but certainly, you know, he was in on it. That's at the beginning of his Malchus. And then we have the Gzer of Haman, and he's more than happy to sign and seal that decree to destroy the entire Jewish people. He adds a point here in the name of the Iyun Yaakov, one of the commentaries on Agadata, that Sofo means the following, that even after he agrees to Esther and he capitulates, but he still says Ad Chatzi Amalchus Veteos. And the Gemara later on is going to say, what does Achashverosh mean when he says Ad Chatzi Amalchus? Anything but the binyan of the Beis HaMikdash. So even after marrying Esther and Esther's the queen and he destroys Haman, but nevertheless he still is still considered a Rasha because he doesn't want to agree at all to allow the Jewish people to build the Beis HaMikdash. So let's not think that at the end of his life, or at the end of his Malchus, he became a Oev Yisrael. He became a good friend of the Jewish people. And the proof would be to that he was Mevatel Gzeira, but no, he still continues. He still continues to try to undermine the Jewish people, and he doesn't want to in any way give permission to build the Beis HaMikdash. He really hasn't changed his attitude towards the Jewish people. He was Mevatel Gzeira, and maybe that was a nes min haShamayim, but he still remains an adversary. So that's called Hu Achashverosh, Hu Berisho Mitchiloso V'Yad Sofo. Now the Gemara wants to bring other cases where the Torah adds the word Hu to indicate that he was the same Rasha from the beginning of his life till the end of his life. And it starts with the pasuk Hu Esav Avi Edom. Now the whole parasha is talking about Esav and all the alufei Esav. So why did it have to add the pasuk of Hu Esav? Those again superfluous words in Brachos Lamed Vav. So once again, Hu Berisho Mitchiloso V'Yad Sofo. And here there are two interpretations of what it means Mitchiloso, that Esav is a Rasha Mitchiloso. Some say that at the age of 15 he sold the Bechora, which meant that it was not significant in his eyes, he wasn't interested. That's Mitchiloso. Others say Mitchiloso even goes back to his state of being an embryo. When his mother would pass by in a Beis Avodah Zarah, he would try to jump out. So that's also Mitchiloso. And what does it mean at Sofo? So at Sofa they interpret, and this is based on Rashi elsewhere, not here, that Misofa means that he didn't want to allow Yaakov to be buried in the Ma'aras HaMachpelah, and that was his rishus at the end of his life. According to some versions in the Medrash, he was actually killed because of that.
No.
By Chushim ben Dan, right? Do you remember that whole story?
His head is there.
And then his head rolled into
rolled
the
in.
Camp.
You checked that?
What?
You checked that?
They said.
Uh-huh.
Here's another extra word, who, in a different context, referring to Dosan v'Aviron. It says in Bamidbar, it says, Hu Dosan v'Aviron, Shehen Berisha mitchiloson v'ad sofon. So let's go back to Tchiloson. Tchiloson would be in a pasuk we read yesterday. It says there, "Vehine shnei anashim ivrim nitzim." So there are two two Jewish people in this case who are fighting with each other. Vayomer l'rosh alama saka reyacha. And Chazal say that these are none other than Dosan va'avira. And they're called Rishoyim. And then at the end of their lives, of course, they play a major role in the rebellion of Korach against Moshe. I have here a footnote. He quotes a pasuk in Bamidbar. It says, "Vayikach Korach v'dasan v'aviron bnei Eliyav v'on ben Peles." And the Medrash Tanchuma says that these were the same dasan v'aviron who, even back in Mitzrayim, were already exhibiting this evil kind of behavior pattern. So that's as far as Dasan Vaviran is concerned. There's also a pasuk in Divrei Yomim, which the Gemara is now going to darshan about Achaz. He was also in Russia. So I'll read to you the whole pasuk. It says, "Ube'es hatzar lo vayosef limol bashem hu hamelech Achaz hu berisho mitchiloso v'ad sofo." So in the beginning of his life, he was mo'al bashem, and even afterwards, he was Mosif Limol Mal Bashem. So his entire life was one continuous chain of rishus. Now, honestly, I'm a little bit confused about this Agadata. I didn't have time to research it further. I would have thought that if you want to, the thrust of what the Gemara is saying is that these Rishonim were real Rishonim. You know, they were the worst of the worst. If you wanted to make that point, I'm not sure why you have to emphasize mitchiloso. I'll tell you what I mean. When I hear the words mitchiloso at sofo, in my mind, it sounds like it's something genetic almost. You know, so from the time he's born, in the case of Esau, maybe even before he's born, there's evil. Now, I would have said if you wanted to really sort of rip it into someone and say how negative it is and what a terrible rush he is, maybe you want to start with saying that he was born at tzaddik, and then he became a Russian. Once, in a certain sense, there's almost a defense argument in favor of a Russia who was a Russian mitchiloso. Unless maybe what the Gemara is trying to say is that, you know, there are different levels of rishus. Maybe the fact that he was so dedicated to rishus from the beginning of his life until the end, you know, never even taking a step this way or that way to look and to re-examine or introspect on his actions, maybe that really demonstrates what an evil person he is. Now the Gemara goes on and flips it around to tzaddikim, and we're going to see extra words in the pasuk describing a tzaddik, and once again we're going to say that his tzidkus starts at the beginning of his life and continues to the end of his life. See, that part I understand a little better, because sometimes you get up a tzaddik in his youth, but then, you know, he's not able to maintain. He could have good beginnings, but not necessarily good endings. So the Gemara emphasizes, based on the pasuk Avram, who Avraham. This is a pasuk in Divrei Hayomim. And once again, the two extra words here, who Avraham. It could have just said Avram. So who b'tzidko mitchiloso v'ad sofo. Right? According to one day in the Gemara, in Chazal, the ripe old age at which Avram came to believe in monotheism was 3 years old. The Rambam, if I'm not mistaken, says he was 48 years old. And anyway, he was already searching from the age of three. It's not clear if at that young age he already saw God's hand in the world, or at least that was the beginning of his search. And then at the end of his life, the pasuk says in Parshas Vayera, "Ki yedativ l'man asher yitzaves banoves beiso achrav v'shamu derech Hashem lasos tztoku mishpat," so that Avram Avinu has a legacy in which he transmits his goodness and his knowledge of God to observe the derech Hashem tzedeku mishpat. This he passes on to his children at the end of his life. So Avram Avinu is who Avram mitchiloso ve'ad sofo b'tzidko. Another case. The pasuk says, "Hu Aaron u'Moshe." Not sure if that's this week's sedra or next week's sedra. Where is this?
Next week's sedra. This week.
Shmos Yud.
Yeah. So we'll get to it soon. Yeah. And again, these are two extra words. And the answer is Hang bin Sidkan mi Trilasan vi ad sofan. There was never a chet with the exception of maybe Riva, but their lives individually represent one continuous chain of goodness. Then we have the same thing with regard to David HaMelech. There's a pasuk in Shmuel. It says, "V'David hu ha-katan, shehu be-katnuso." Now the word katan usually means pointing his youth, but here it means his midah of anava, of humility. He always considers himself small when he compares himself to other people. And that midah of humility, which is personified by David, takes David from the beginning of his life until the end of his life. He lost it at Sofa. Okay, so here we're going to have two episodes in his life in which David HaMelech compares himself to someone else. In the first case, we're talking about Mephibosheth, who is his Rebbe, and we're talking about an early stage in David HaMelech's life when he's still a youngster. And he compares himself to Mephibosheth. And Bekatnuso Hiktin Atzmo Eitzel Misha Godol Mimenu B'Torah. In other words, since Mephibosheth has more Torah knowledge than he does, then he sees himself, David HaMelech, as relatively insignificant. When he doesn't shine up, he doesn't compare to Mephibosheth. Kach B'Malchuso, and also during his years of kingship, Hiktin Atzmo Eitzel Misha Godol Mimenu B'Chachma. This is the case of Achitofel, and Achitofel was the one who gave David HaMelech an Eitzah. He gave him a wise counsel as to how to return, how to protect the earth from overflowing. This is a sugya in Masechta Sota, if I'm not mistaken. Let's go over this one more time here, if I can find the footnote for you. Oh, so this is a Gemara in Masechta Brachos. That appears also in Masechta Sukkah, and David HaMelech was digging down in order to find roots or foundations for the Beis HaMikdash, and all of a sudden the Me'at Tahom, the waters from the depths of the earth, started flooding the earth. So David HaMelech asked if there's anyone who would know whether halachically it's permissible to write the Shem Hashem, inscribe it on a piece of pottery, throw it into the water, and that would stop the water from flooding the entire earth. And it was Achitofel who came up with the Kal Vachomer. He said, in the case of Sota, we're allowed to erase the name of God for the sake of Shalom Bein Ish L'Ishto. How much more so that we're allowed to erase the name of God in order to save the entire world. So that's a sugya Masechta Brachos. And David HaMelech had a tremendous amount of respect for Achitofel because Achitofel was greater than him. In Chachma, he came up with this solution to a problem that David could not come up with a solution to. And David calls him in the Pasuk, Alufasi, Alufi Umiyuadi. He's referring to Achitofel. This is a Pasuk in Tehillim, in Kapitel Nun He. And there's also a mission about this in Amos that says if you learn even one thing from someone else, you respect him, you call him your Rebbe, you stand up for him, he's called Alufasi Umiyuadi. So we have again, we have three people who are Rishon Mitchilas Vad Sofo for the extra Pasuk, and that includes Esav, that includes Dosav Aviron, and Achaz, Melech Achaz. And now we have Kenegdom, three people who are Tzadikim Mitchilas Vad Sofo, actually four people technically. We have Avram Avinu, we have Aaron and Moshe as a team, so to speak, and we have David HaMelech. And now the Gemara goes back to the Pesukim in Megillas Esther. So it says, Hu Achashverosh HaMolech. And the Gemara is going to make a big deal about the word HaMolech, because the beginning of the Pasuk speaks about the past. It says, Vayihi Bimei Achashverosh. It's going back to the past, so he should have said, Hu Shemolach. Why does it say, Hu Shehamolech? V'yomar Rav, Shemolach Me'atzmo. That this is teaching us something about how Achashverosh took over the position of king. He was not in the lineage, in the official lineage. And so when it says HaMolech, Molech is an active verb that describes Achashverosh taking over the Malchus. And what happens is that he marries Vashti, who is the queen, and that's how he gets to be the king. Amrilei, others say Lishvach. Some want to say that this pasuk is Lishvach. This reminds me of Noach, right? The Amrilei Lignai. Amrilei Lishvach, those who say it's a positive thing to Lohavi, Inish the Choshen Lemalka Kavase. It means that he took over the Malchus because there was no one else who was worthy of being a Melech. And the Amrilei Lignai, the Lohavi Chazi Lemalchus, so he took it over by force, but he really had no, he did not have the credentials to be the Melech. Umamona Yiseirahu Diyahiv. He also apparently bought the position, Vikam, and he became the king. Mehodu Viad Kush. Now, how do you learn this Vehodu Viad Kush? The Gemara is going to offer two approaches. One approach is that these were the ends of the world. That's how we always understand it. So he had dominion over all the provinces on the face of the earth. The other way is to say that these two places were very close to each other. And we'll see what that means. Ravu Shmuel Chad Omer Hodu B'Sofa Olam V'Kush B'Sofa Olam. So the Pasuk is telling me that he was a king over all the provinces from one end of the world to the other end of the world.
The world of in their days.
In their day, okay. I guess you could say like from the west to the east, you know. That these two places were near each other, these two provinces. So it means then that not that he was in control, he was in dominion of these two places and only these two places. But what it means is, because the Torah, the Megillah, you know, says explicitly that he had a control of 127 Medinos. So what it means is Kishem Shem Moloch Al Hodu Vikush, just like he was king over these two provinces which are contiguous, is Kach Moloch Misofa Olam Viatsofo. So too he had control and dominion on the entire world. He was Tokev Vechazek Bekol HaOlam. He was Sholeit on the entire world. Afilu, even on far-flung places, the fear of Ahasuerus was upon the people. So in other words, the Gemara is making a comparison. I mean, the Megillah is making a comparison according to this Ma'an Yomar, that Hodu and Kush are close by. So Shushan, it makes sense that the dominion of Ahasuerus should spread out over Hodu and Kush, and the people in those two provinces would be afraid of Ahasuerus. But the Torah wants to say that just like he was in control of nearby provinces, so too far-flung provinces were also under his dominion, and they also had a fear of Ahasuerus. Kayotze b'dovra to Omer. The Gemara wants to show you something similar to this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel in terms of an interpretation of a pasuk in Malachim, say from Malachim, with regard to the dominion of Shlomo Melach. The pasuk says in Sefer Malachim, it says, Ki hu rodeh b'chol ever hanor mitifsach v'ad aza. And again, we're going to have the same machlokas. What does it mean? Mitifsach ad aza, v'ad aza. Rabu Shmuel chadomar tifsach b'sofa olam v'aza b'sofa olam. Sometimes I wish that was true about aza. But anyway, so... So he's saying that he controlled, that Shlomo HaMelech had control over the entire world. Those the bounds of his melucha went from one end of the world to the other extreme end of the world. But the other interpretations, he was two cities that were near each other. And it doesn't mean that he controlled only these two cities that were nearby, but Kishem Shemolach al Tifsach v'al Aza, just like he had complete control and dominion over these two cities, is Kach Molach al Kol HaOlam Kulo, so to have control over the entire world. Do you have any footnotes there, maybe?
No, not really. No? I mean, since they have some discussion on the Hodu Kush, basically saying that there's some discussion saying that Maral and says that this doesn't pertain to geographic location, that everyone agrees they were adjacent to each other,
But the ones who say they're opposite at the end, opposite of the worlds, say that if you look at it, the world as a globe, then from one you can go all the way around from one to the other. So, but this is a question that I sometimes have, especially like some of the things we, like even earlier when they were talking about, say, Rome being 300 by 300 miles, where there's
like hyperboles.
Yes, hyperboles. So they're learning he ruled the entire world, but in Tanakh we know Shlomo didn't rule the entire world at that time. That there were other, kingdoms that he had to deal with.
The Gemara is going to talk about that if I remember correctly.
But
you're right. Yeah.
It was
Sheva v'Yesra Umeya Medina, 127 provinces, and Harisha Mona Hakosav es Mispar Shonim Ayichidos Tchila. Oh, now the Gemara is interested in the sequence. What happens is that instead of starting with a higher number, which is 100, and then going to 20, and then down to 7, it seems that the pattern here is to start with the lower numbers, which is the number of individual years, that's 7 years, and then go to the higher numbers. And the Gemara is bothered by this because we're going to find the exact opposite in three cases. Avram, meaning the years of Avram, number two, Sarah, and number three, Yishmael. So let me read the psukim here that are relevant. In the case of Avram, the pasuk says, "V'ele yemei shnei chayei Avram asher chay ma'as shana." So he started with the highest number, the 100, right, the centennial, and then shivim shana. Then it goes down to 70, then chamesh shana down to 5. The same thing applies in Sarah. He tells you where to look up the pasuk in Sarah and in Yishmael. So therefore, Rav Chisda is bothered. Why is it that the order is reversed here in the presentation regarding the provinces of Achashvesh? Omar Rav Chisda, what is this teaching us? Bitchila molach al sheva, ulubasov molach al esrim, ulubasov molach al mea. So in other words, Achashvesh worked very hard and he spread his wings, his dominion from smaller numbers, from smaller areas to larger areas. This would probably also reflect what we saw before, the opinion Lignai that he usurped the kingship, he doesn't really deserve to be the king.
Well, actually, it could be Leshevach, in that he went for, because I know back at that time, I know Cyrus conquered all this stuff and then he made this whole empire, and then I think there were always these disputes, and the same thing happened with Alexander the Great, where a whole bunch of different people came up and tried to take over after them, and so he was able to actually take over the whole thing, starting from 7, going to 20, and then 127. His power grew, so you could say it's very
quelchetti.
Exactly. So he was actually the most deserving to be king because he was the one who actually was able to conquer all of it, or to take to assert his rulership.
Now it's interesting. The Malbim has a pshat about how did Haman. I mean, there are many, many answers to this question, but one of the answers how did Haman convince Achashverosh, to agree to destroy the Jewish people? And of course, you remember that Haman says to Achashverosh that these people are spread out throughout. So the Malbim has an interpretation that Achashverosh was very afraid of a rebellion. And the fact that the Jewish people were spread out amongst all the nations, they could easily rebel, and that would create a rebellion that would spread throughout all his provinces. I thought of it when you mentioned, Eric, the fact that Achashverosh was able to overcome the rebellion. But maybe because there was so much anti-Achashverosh movement, that's why he was paranoid about this. The Gemara says, "Alamiato, how are you going to be consistent with this methodology of Drasha when it comes to Amram, like the father of Moshe Rabbeinu? It says, Ushnei chayei Amram Sheva Ushloshim Umiyashana is my darshan. But what are you going to say about that? Because again, we start with the lower numbers. It's very interesting that the Gemara is like almost attacking Rav Chisda. I wouldn't have attacked Rav Chisda. I mean, the pasuk itself is difficult because the system changes. Maybe maybe with, if not for Rav Chisda, maybe we wouldn't have made a big deal about it. Maybe the Torah sometimes does it this way or this way. It's Lashon B'nei Adam. I don't know. You'd say it's some sort of. But once Rav Chisda is making a big deal about it, and he's telling us that Achashverosh is the exception to the rule, then here you have Amram. So the answer is Shaini Hocha, that Rav Chisda could defend himself. He's saying the reason why I have this drush in the case of Achashverosh is the Kro Yisrael, because the whole pasuk itself is completely unnecessary. We know that Achashverosh controlled the entire world. So Sheva, the Esru, Mehmedina, Lomali, why did the Torah have to mention the number of provinces? Shmaimini Ladrush must be telling me something new that I wouldn't have known, the way he established his firm foothold and dominion over the earth. But in the case of Amram, we're going to have to go back to, I think, to assume that sometimes the Torah does it this way and sometimes the Torah does it that way. Now, on the footnote here, he quotes a Marsha, and the Marsha says the following, that in the case of Sara Yemenu, it says, what does it say there? It starts with 100, does it not? Do we want to open it? It's Perikov Gimel in Brachos, we should know by heart. El Shnei Chayei Sara, what does it say? Ma'ashana?
Yeah.
The Esrim Shana V'Shiva Shana, right? Am I right? Yeah. I don't want to, I'm going to mess up this Marsha if I got it wrong. So just make sure I'm 100% right. He says, in the case of Sara, Chazal tell us that the reason why it starts with the number 100, the number 100, again, in the case of Avraham Avinu, what did it say? It said 100. So what are we darshaning by Sara? Sham, says the Marsha, in the case of Sara, Mono Hameos Kodem, he counts the hundreds first. Yakach Vesos Vechidos. And why? To teach us that Baskuf Kibas Chav, and Bas Chof Kibash Zayin, right? Kibash Shah. Yeah.
Zayin. I took it up with him. It was correct.
Oh, I see. He's saying the following, that the Gemara seems to assume that we're only going to darshan this if there's something, some aberration, some unusual phenomenon. Like, for example, in the case of Achashverosh, it's the whole pasuk is completely superfluous. So he says, what bothers Chazal in the case of Chayisara? I mean, the case of Chayisara, it's just a repetition of the general rule that we start with the higher numbers. So why do they make this whole drasha? And the answer is because of the word shana that repeats itself over and over again. That was the extra rule. So the Marsha wants to show you that, again, we're only going to darshan the sequence of numbers if there's an extra word in the pasuk. Tana Rabbanan. Shlosha Molchu Bekipa. Kipa means the entire earth. So we have three great leaders that control the entire world. And the Gemara is going to ask you a question about Shlomo. That's where I remember it. Yeah. That why isn't Shlomo on this list? And the Gemara is going to say that he didn't really control the entire world. But the Gemara is not sure about the following three either. Ve'elohein Achav V'achashverosh Uvuchadnetzar. So the Gemara wants to know, how do you know such a thing? Right? Minayin l'dover zeh. So the Gemara says, Be'achav, with regard to Achav, the Pesuk says in Malachim Aleph, it says that Ovadyo says to Elio, Chai Hashem Elokecha, Im yesh goy mamlecha asher lo shalach Adoni. Now the word Adoni here is not a reference to Eliyahu, because we're talking about Mamlocha. Eliyahu was a Navi, wasn't a Melech, but rather to Achav, the king of Israel. And Shom Levakeshcha. And the end of the pasuk says, Yomu Ayin Vishbias HaMamlocha V'Sagoy Asher Lo Yimtzeecha. So what it means is that is there some nation on the world which would not be part of this Hishbias HaMamlocha, this Shvuah? So it says, he says, Chai Hashem, he takes an oath, this is Ovadyo, and he says, is there some guy, is there some melucha, memshola, mamlocha, that would possibly not be included in this oath that Achav sent? So the Gemara says, Ilo da'avi molech alayu, if Achav was not a king that dominated over all these people, all these nations, Heichi Matzav Mishpelu. How can he possibly insist that they have to obey his command and his oath? It must be that he controlled the entire world. And the fact that he says that there's no goy and there's no mamlacha, it means that he had control over the entire kippah. Nebuchadnezzar, how do we know that he controlled the entire world? The pasuk in Yirmiyahu HaNavi, and I'll read the whole pasuk to you. The siv, it says, V'ata anochi nosati es kol haratzosa eile biyad Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel v'ya ha-goyim ha-mamlecha asher lo yavdu oso es Nebuchadnezzar melech Bavel ves asher lo yitein es tzavaro bi'ol melech Bavel b'charev u'berov u'bedever So it says that God gave Memshala to Nebuchadnezzar over the entire world. And that's what it says. Again, either way, whichever way you interpret it, it means he had control and dominion over the entire world. So the Gemara asked for Suleka, and now we're on Daf Yud Aleph Amid Beis. Is it really so that there was no one else besides these three? Let's go over the three. It was Achav, it was Nebuchadnezzar, and Achashverosh. Vayika Shlomo. So the Mepharshim explained that the pasuk seems to indicate that Shlomo Melech had control over the entire world. There's a pasuk at the beginning of Malachim. It says, Ki hu rodeh. He has control, dominion. B'chol Ever Anor. And again, there were two interpretations, but both of them agreed that he had control over the entire world. So the Gemara answers, no. Delo solik malchuse. Okay, so this means that his malchus was not everlasting. And at some point, we're not sure if at the end of his life or somewhere in the middle of his life, that's going to be a machlokas in the Gemara. He lost his control over the mamlocha. And the pasuk is based on Koheles.
The point at which there's a split in the kingdom.
Yeah. So anyway, Koheles opens up with the following. Ani Koheles, this is this 12th verse in the first chapter. Ani Koheles, Hayisi Melech al Yisrael B'Yushalayim. It sounds like he was a melech on Yisrael and Yushalayim, and only on Yisrael and Yushalayim. It also seems to indicate that Hayisi in the past tense, which implies that he was Yored Mimalchuso. Ha'anichal Mandi Omar, according to one Mandi Omar, melech vehejot. Melech vehejot means that he was a king, but at the end of his days he was a hejot, meaning a regular person, rank and file citizen. Now we understand why he has to be excluded from the list of those who control the world, because he lost his control. Elamani Omar, Melech vehejot umelech. I don't know if I have a segel in my under the mem. It should be Molach, I think. What do you have? Do you have vocals?
Melech.
You also have Melech?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I thought the word Molach would be better, would be more appropriate here. But in any event, Melech vehejot umelech. Maybe it's describing him as opposed to his kingship.
Yeah,
so he was a king.
That's the point.
And he went down to becoming a hejot.
I didn't know.
And he went back to becoming a melech. So Michael, maybe so because, no, the Gemara doesn't want to assume that since he had a period of time in the middle where he had to leave, he was deposed, you know, as melech, that therefore he should be omitted from this list. He says here that this is all based on a Gemara Gittin. And the Gemara Gittin says, Hishlichu melech ashedim l'makom rachok. At some point in his life, I guess because he was guilty of sin, the melech ashedim came and uprooted him and threw him to some place rachok. Yashav komo al kise malchuso. This melech ashedim took over the malchus. Menaseh Shlomo hejot u'machazo al v'sochim. You get the impression here that there's something metaphysical going on.
Well, yeah, this continue. I mean, I think that's the next
piece.
The Maimar, Shlomo, Milta.
So he says the following, Shlomo, Milsachrita, Havi, Be, Shemolach, Al Yonim, Viala Techtonim, Shenemar, Vayeshev, Shlomo, Al Kise, Hashem. So what does this mean? He says that the reason why the Tana doesn't include Shlomo on this list is because Malach al Helyonim, he was the king over the Shadim, the Al Hatachtonim, and also on the lower beings, which means the human beings that. So, in other words, it sounds like Shlomo Melech had some sort of metaphysical control over the higher worlds of Shadim that would come down and sort of flow through the atmosphere of this world. And that's what it means, Al Kisei Hashem. So his moshav was not just down on this world where we saw him as a physical being, but he also had a moshav up in Shamayim. That's called Kisei Hashem. So this interpretation goes the exact opposite of the previous interpretation. It's Mamish bin Akotz al Akotz, because the first interpretation says that there was a period of time in which the Melech HaShedim took over and Shlomo Melech wasn't in control. The second interpretation seems to assume, you'll check me out in your footnotes, that Shlomo Melech was even greater and his dominion was far, much more far-reaching than that of the other three that are listed here. That he had a control and a dominion even on Shamayim. He sat on the Kisei of Hashem and he controlled even the world of Shadim. The Gemara now asks for Ha'avi Sancheirev. Sancheirev also ruled the entire universe, the Chsiv. It says that when he came to conquer Yerushalayim at the time of Chizkiyahu Melech, so his second in command, his name was Ravashka, okay? He was the Shliach of Sancheirev, and he declared the following. In the name of his master Sancheirev, Mi b'chol elokei haratzos ha'ele asher yitzilu es artzom miyadi ki yatzil Hashem es Yerushalayim miyadi. He sort of made fun of those who thought that Sancheirev could not conquer Yerushalayim, and he said, well, is there any nation that was spared from my dominion? Do you think therefore that God is going to come and intervene and protect Yerushalayim so that I, says Sancheirev, I won't be able to conquer Sanhedrin, Yerushalayim? So it seems from that that this statement indicates that Sancheirev had control over all the world. So the grants is all the world, but with one exception. There was one city that he could not control and dominate. Ha'ikar Yerushalayim de lo kovsha. Now, he tells you a little bit about the history of this. I'll mention it in passing. This is all based on Melachim Beis, Perek Yutes, that Nogaf Hashem Escheloso, there was a tremendous miracle when Sancheirev came to conquer Yerushalayim, that God made a certain magefa, some sort of a plague that brought to the that was brought upon the tremendous armies of Sancheirev. Umesu, listen to this, Rav Osai, Mea Ushmoni V'chamisha Elef Ish, Belaila Echad, 185,000 people died on one night. You know, when I see these Gemaras, I wonder if this is written up in any history books, you know. It sounds pretty impressive. V'yafu Atzmo Meis B'yad Bonov.
Winners write history.
Okay, maybe. And Sancheirev also was put to death at the sword of his own children. So Sancheirev, yes, he ruled the world, but when he tried to conquer Yerushalayim, and he was such a boastful guy, and he said, let's see if God can save Yerushalayim from my hands. In fact, Hashem made this tremendous miracle. Va'ika Daryavash. Daryavash ruled over the entire world. The Siv, Daryavash Malka, Kosa, Blechol, Amam, Amaya, Umaya, Uvishanaya, Tidarin, Bechol, Ara, Shlomcham, Yizge. He sent letters to all the nations of the world and the entire universe. And he told about he declared the great miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did for Daniel, that saved Daniel from the lion's den. And he commanded them to serve Hashem and to be afraid of Hashem. So we see that every nation was under his control. So why didn't Daryavash get the this accolade of being one of those who were Moshe B'Kippah? So Gemara answers, Sheva Delo Malacha, there were seven countries that he wasn't able to conquer. Dechsiv shvar kadam dar yavosh v'hakim amachusa lachshedar panaya meavi esrim heavid darish meavi esrim sarim. He set up 120 different offices. Shekol echad yeh bemuna al medina achas mimalchuso, and each one of these officers had dominion. He was the agent of Daryavosh. So we have 120 sarim, and that corresponds to 120 medinos. And Achashverosh was in charge. He was in dominion of 127. So it means that Daryavosh was missing 7. Vayika Korash, Dechsiv Koamar Koresh, Mola, Melech, Paras, Kol Mamlechos Haaretz Nasal V'Yashem. I control over all the countries of the world. He was also a Dafka good guy, I think. Am I right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the Gemara answers, Hasa Mishtabuche Hudukah Mishtabach B'Nafshe. Sometimes a king, for public relations purposes, he will boast about his control over all the countries of the world, but in truth, that's just his gaiva. He's being shtaber biatzmo. Benafshe means biatzmo, that he's molech al kol ha'olam. And now the Gemara goes back to the Megillah. Okay, we'll push it for another 2-3 minutes. Vayomim lahem kesheves hamelech achashverosh al kisei malchuso. It sounds like immediately after Achashverosh took over the malchus, he was already Kishemes HaMelech. And yet the pasuk Kishemes HaMelech means he had control. You know, he was securely, politically secure. But yet, Uksiv Basar, immediately after it says, Mishnah Shol Smachos of Mishkan, he only throws that big banquet after 3 years. What was going on during that 3-year period from the time he took over the Malchus? I'm a Rava. You know why he didn't make a Mishkan until the 3rd year? The answer is my kisheves. It doesn't mean that it's yoshva l'rishon al kisei malchus. It doesn't mean that only now, after 3 years, did he have sheves, did he have political security and control, absolute control. But rather, what it means is li'achar shenis yashva daito. What does that mean, this Yashva Daita? When did he become calm? Achashverosh was always afraid that of the 70 years, and that's going to be tomorrow's subject. I'm going to need your help, Rabbi Osai, for tomorrow. It's unbelievably complicated to get all the calculations of the 70 years. So in any event, Achashverosh was always worried because Yirmiyahu HaNavi had already foretold that after a 70-year period, the Jewish people come back and rebuild the Beis HaMikdash. And he was always afraid during those first 3 years that maybe that nevuah, that prophecy would come to fruition, and then the Jewish people would be able to establish their own political independent commonwealth in the state of Israel. It means they would no longer be under control of Achashverosh. So he waited 3 years, and the Gemara is going to go through all the calculations, because after those 3 years, Achashverosh knew for sure that the nevuah, in his mind at least, that the nevuah would not come to pass, and there would not be any redemption, and the Beis HaMikdash would not be rebuilt. And this Mishteh would celebrate the fact that the people of Israel would no longer be able to rebuild the Beis HaMikdash, that the nevuah would never come to pass. And therefore, he invites his Sarim and Avadim and all the Medinos. He uses the Klei HaMikdash, he himself wears the Migdei Kohuna. This is all a public demonstration that the Jews are has-beens, and they will not return to build the Beis HaMikdash. I'll just read one more line, and then we'll have to give a real introduction tomorrow. Wish me luck. So I have a few hours today. Really complicated. I tried it over Shabbos. In any event, we're up to Nebuchadnezzar's son over here, and Nebuchadnezzar's son's name was Belshazzar. He actually was killed by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He was punished by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. He also came up with a calculation as to when the 70-year period would have passed, and he also took out the Klei HaMikdash in his great Seudah, That's called Belshazzar's Feast. If you're ever in Trafalgar Square in London, you'll see one of the most famous Rembrandt paintings, which is called Belshazzar's Feast. And he made a feast, and then the hand came down, because why was he punished? He, Omar Belshazzar, Chishev, he calculated the 7 years of Vintah, he made a mistake. We'll see that Ahasuerus also made a mistake. And according to Belshazzar's calculation, the 70 years of Babel had already passed, and therefore it was time to take out the Klei HaKodesh and celebrate. No, but Ahasuerus declares, Hashivna v'lo ta'ino. I would make the right calculations, and I'm going to use the Klei HaMikdash, and I'm not going to be punished. So let's just make a note as to where we're up to here. So we'll know where to pick it up.
Everybody thinks they know us. They know nothing.
Yeah. It's amazing how history just repeats itself. Yeah.